have the, what I sent you for the, to execute what the board wanted, instructed me to do last meeting, and that is to show you what the most recent Aqua Virginia proposal looks like with my required changes in it, suggested changes in it. Now, I will apologize to you for the red line copy, because it's probably not at all helpful. The problem we had with it is nobody seems to have a workable Word version, Word program version of the document. I actually called Mr. Satterwhite, and he told me he would look for a Word version. A day or so later, he sent me a scanned version of it from a PDF, and it, when you do that, I don't know whether you do this often, but it doesn't translate a lot of the codes correctly, and you get a lot of spacing problems, and sometimes it reads wrong, and that sort of thing. The problem is I had to go back and edit all that so that it made sense. What I should have done is made all the textual corrections before I made the substantive corrections, and then saved it so I had a clean copy. I didn't do that, so I didn't ask Christina before I did it. She would have told me how to do it. But that's why the redlining is so not useful, because it does every, you know, every time I deleted an extraneous line or something like that, it noted that. But so those are not necessarily my changes. I thought over the weekend that it might be a good idea for you all to have just my changes, so you could put the clean copy and my changes side by side. That's the second email I sent you. And hopefully that's more helpful to you. Now, the one thing that doesn't appear in that second email is the two changes that the board instructed me to make, and that is that the change from 40 days to 75, 45 days to 70. And I think it's 75. And the other one is with regard to the conflict resolution, the jurisdictional issue. That's in the clean draft, and you can see that. I don't know whether you all have had a chance to review those in any detail, but I don't know how you want me to go through it. But basically, that's if you take my changes subject to those two corrections, two modifications the board directed, it looks like the clean copy I sent you. And if it doesn't, you know, I'm not to tell you that we didn't make a typo or something, because we didn't. There was a lot of clerical work involved in this, unfortunately. But that's what it looks like. If you have questions, I'll be glad to go through any or all of it.
Questions from the county attorney?
I would like for him just to go through the specifically his changes and anything else that he thinks would be appropriate. It's time sort of to hand down to the next board next year. I don't know how you all feel about it.
What did you say, Mr. Weaver?
Mr. Weaver's asked if Mr. Payne would go ahead and review his changes made to the document.
Okay. I'm going to go through based on my September 27 document.
Okay.
Right. Understand that it does not contain those two things the board said. Those are in the clean copy. But when we get to those, we'll discuss it.
And so the second email you got, that's this pack, this file right here. That has the most of them. And it'll be highlighted in color. It'll be colored on there. In the second email you got.
Wouldn't it be more value to go over it with the next board? Wouldn't the next board want to hear all of this?
Well, they probably would, but we haven't.
Oh,
we have to decide whether we're going to send it.
Oh,
yeah, we have to decide whether we're going to send this to the public. Does that make?
One way to do this would be
step ahead.
One way to do that, as always, would be to do exactly what you said, and that is simply defer this till after the first of the year,
but
let the new board consider.
Right, but they need. We all need to see it so we can go to public.
Correct.
That's why this board, right?
Yeah, you have to decide if you want to go.
Right.
As a counteroffer, if it goes as a counteroffer, then it has to go on online.
It will not be a counteroffer, I'm confident,
mm-hmm.
because I already know that some of these changes have either been agreed to, some have just been agreed to, mm-hmm. and some of them are were, as of October 2nd, under further discussion. But I think this is the way to get the, my intent would be, if you direct this to be sent to Aqua, would be to send it with a sort of, this is a reopening of negotiations.
And actually, this is where the next board will take it up at, if you do send something.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, but I think we need it here also. You know, there will be a few of us left.
Absolutely. Three of you.
I told you before that these changes fall into four categories. One are changes that, in my judgment, are necessary to make the agreement lawful. That some of these provisions are simply unconstitutional or otherwise violate positive law. As I told them then, I don't consider those to be negotiable. The second category is issues that, in my judgment, would simply be so inequitable to the county and its taxpayers that I wouldn't consider it reasonable protection for the county and its taxpayers. And I'll identify.
Is that the debt limit?
No. The debt limit is a constitutional issue.
Okay.
I'll give you some examples of these as we go through. The third one, category is those are maybe negotiable in minor ways, but I think they are close to being of the essence of the contract as far as I'm concerned. The third category is ones that are required by the PPEA, which has specific provisions, but which are not specifically identified in here. And I'll give you some examples of that too. The last one are issues that I would call issues of good practice. They're not necessarily indispensable, but they're things that ought to be changed. And those would be negotiable. So if you look at 1.04, 1.04 is the added language is intended. This section deals with making a nexus between the sewer line agreement, and we are talking about the sewer line agreement at the moment, between the sewer line agreement and the bulk water agreement with Aqua. And the added language simply makes this, ties it back into the default language, so that if there's a default by either party, then it changes the picture. The second one, 2.06, there are several instances here where there are issues which require an exercise of judgment. And in this is the first one. The way this is worded in their proposal is that if it comes down to a choice of whether to do something or not, Aqua has unfettered discretion. It makes the call, and there's no requirement of any reason for it or anything else. Aqua just makes the call. It's non-reviewable. We don't get a say. I think that's entirely unreasonable. So that's where this change occurs.
We have no input at all on it, in other words.
Well, yeah. So, for example, this one talks about the negotiation of easements for the lines, and it has to be, before it can be accepted, it has to be approved by ODPC. And what I've added is ODPC in its reasonable judgment. So ODPC can't just say, that's Joe Blow's property, and we don't like Joe Blow, we don't want to give him any money, so you can't put it there. Or they just say, you can't put it there. There's no reason for it. We're not stating any reason. We're just not going to allow you to do it. I think that's entirely unreasonable. I would not accept that.
Now, which one of those four things would that you said that they were based on four things, which one is 104? Are they
104 is
which number is that?
Is probably the last category.
It's number four.
It's good practice.
Okay.
206 and 207 are The second category.
Okay.
And 207, this again is the...
Is a reasonable judgment.
Yeah, it requires that, the parties be reasonable in, making these judgments. It can't just be arbitrary. In 301, this is a category four thing. This is making the language consistent. The plans and design specifications is a defined term, and it needs to be consistent. So is the term effective date. So it needs to be consistent. With the 303 is the final alignment, and the first change is a grammatical change to make it clear that the point we're talking about, the words "at the" is added. And then at the end, there's a effective date is also corrected. And then the last changes are that if the parties can't agree on a final alignment, we simply shake hands and walk away. What they have in here is that we have to pay all their expenses up to that date. And what my suggested change is that if we terminate the agreement because we cannot agree on an appropriate alignment, the parties simply walk away, deposits are refunded, neither party owes anybody anything, and you walk away. That's what I would consider to be good practice and pretty much a routine for this kind of contract. I think it's unreasonable for it to be that as one-handed, as one-sided as they're requiring. 305,
that would be under which one of those four?
That's number two.
Okay.
Number 305, the first change is changes the word "may" into "shall." May is precatory, permissive. Shall is mandatory. And again, this is requiring ODPC to finalize contractual agreements with successful bidders. And if everything is going the way it's supposed to be going, they shouldn't have an unfettered right simply to say we're not going to do that. If the facts are as they're set out in the contract, they are required to go forward. Now, when I say required to go forward, obviously, anytime you have a contract, if the parties agree to something in a specific instance, they can do that. But I'm assuming that there's no specific agreement from time to time. The next change is I've deleted the word damages. The phrase they had was damages and costs. I've deleted the word damages because I think that's a term of art that relates to an award of a court. The term costs is much more appropriate in this case. The term expenses would be another one that you might use. I don't like to use costs normally because costs in a contract like this, to me, evokes court costs, and that's not what we're talking about here. But the cost is the word they use, so that's why I left it in. The fourth paragraph of 305, this paragraph has talks about going forward once the projected costs come in and the plans are approved and all this kind of thing. And it gives four alternative occurrences. One is the parties agree to go forward. They go forward. Here's what happens. The other three are the county elects not to proceed. And the way they had it set out is that if the county elects not to proceed, then the county reimburses ODPC for its expenses, etc. The second option is if the county wants to go forward but ODPC refuses to go forward, they simply had ODPC walking away. And in my opinion, that's that's entirely inequitable. If it's their decision not to go forward when everything is in position to go forward, they ought to reimburse the county. So that's what I've added here. The final option is if the county and ODPC agree not to go forward, and that is an option. Again, I've added language making if ODPC, they have ODPC making the decision what to do if the parties can't agree in its sole discretion. I think that's inappropriate. And what I've put in here is that the governmental approvals shall be in form and substance reasonably satisfactory to both parties. There's another reasonably satisfactory, and cutting out ODPC's sole discretion, reasonably satisfactory to both parties. What that means is that if something's required to be done, neither the county nor ODPC can on its own simply arbitrarily say we're not going to do that, or this is the only way we'll do it. There's a requirement of reasonableness, and the parties have to agree. And that's reviewable by a court, because if, for example, the ODPC proposed one course of action and the county says, no, we're simply not going to do that, ODPC could challenge that in court by saying the county's action is unreasonable, or vice versa. Again, I'd consider that to be routine kind of language in a contract. I think it's unusual to have provisions like this that are in the sole discretion of one party or the other. Then the next change is in 306A. Added the word plans and design specifications. Again, that's it several times. That's to be consistent. And the last sentence I think I deleted as being surplusage, because it's already covered other places. Subsection B, there again, plans and design specifications need to be consistent. And it specifies that those approved plans and specifications are to be the basis of the project for bidding. So everybody knows when it goes out to bid what the project looks like. In 4.03,
B, the conflict committee, that's the first time I've seen that.
That comes up in the conflict resolution provision later.
Oh, okay.
4.03, this is one of the PPEA requirements. This allows the county the right to make reasonable inspections. The county's required to make inspections by PPEA. So I've changed it from shall be allowed to shall make reasonable inspections, because PPEA requires it. 4.08, this is a matter of time for responding to requests for change orders. And what this requires, what their language required, 48 hours as a time limit for doing it. I don't think that's workable, because if you have 48 hours, if a request for a change order comes in at 4:00 on Friday afternoon, that would require that the change order be acted on not later than Sunday afternoon. So what I've done is changed it to 2 business days. So if the request comes in on Friday, it would be Monday and Tuesday, right? And again, unless you've got an emergency, I don't like having hours in a contract. It's conventional that you use a day or a month or or year or something like that. 4.09 is a requirement of the PPEA that is required to make the contractors required to make financial statements of the county on a periodic basis, but at least annually. The 5.02 deals with documentation for completion specifies what completion is. It has to be done according to the approved plans. And if the county doesn't accept that statement, which, you know, let's say it's done and we think it's not, we have 15 days from the statement of completion to state that they're not completed as required by the plans and identifying the problems, then allowing ODPC to have the opportunity to cure within a reasonable time and issue another certificate of completion. So, for example, let's say, I'm going to make this up, this is kind of a silly one, but let me make it up for clarity. They build a sewer line, but they don't hook it up to the plant. They come in and say, this is finished. We say, no, it's not finished, because you still have to connect it to the plant. You don't necessarily have to turn the valve, but you have to have the piping in. We would have 15 days to make that request. Then they would have a reasonable time to come back in, make further changes, and submit another statement of completion. Again, that's a matter that I think is simply, that's equitable and fair practice. 6.03, I think G is
typos in the NF.
Yeah, right. And those are just a little bit of the paragraphing. 6.04, the way it reads now is that if there are interruptions, unplanned service interruptions, the county agrees that ODPC is not responsible for any damages resulting from those interruptions. That is way excessively broad. And what I've added is that ODPC is not liable for damages for interruptions, except to the extent the interruption arises from the negligence or other fault of ODPC. So, for example, they simply don't perform regular required maintenance on a pump, and the pump breaks down. That's a matter of their negligence, and they should be liable for that.
You redlined all of that.
Yeah, that's the DOC agreement.
Right. That's deleted because our DOC contract doesn't say that.
Right.
We can't do that. What it would require is that we shall have entered into a contract with DOC acceptable to ODPC for the treatment of up to approximately 150,000 gallons per day of raw sewage for a term not less than 20 years. That's legally impossible. It's physically impossible because DOC doesn't have 150,000 gallons to give us. And second, DOC cannot and will not enter into a contract for 20 years. So we can't do that. That's why this is noted as deleted in its entirety. 7.05 is with respect to the service district, and there's a reference to the Virginia Department of Corrections referred to in 7.04, and of course that's deleted because 7.04 is deleted. These are some technical tweakings about the, there's correction, a couple typos, but this deals with the details of the service district. I think they have agreed to this, so I don't think this one's controversial.
This is the grandfathering issue, correct?
Well, part of it's the grandfathering, and there's a couple other minor things, but I don't think this one's at all controversial. 7.09 is a provision that I thought was necessary to include, which makes clear that Section 7 is preconditions to AQUA's, to ODPC's obligations. And this makes clear that in the event that there's a failure of preconditions and neither party is at fault, that all the deposits are returned and the shake hands and walk away and there's no liability to anybody else. That was not simply not in here. I think that's entirely necessary to make it all fair.
And that's 7.08?
7.09.
Nine?
There's no change to 7.08. I don't know what their position is on that. 8.01, there's a couple of typos in the first part. And then the last part makes clear that the term, quote, base year, end quote, is the first consecutive 12-month period following the date of substantial completion. So it makes clear what date you're running these things from. Then the next one is 8.01B. 8.01D requires any deposit the county makes to be deposited in an interest-bearing account.
What number you talking now?
8.01D, dog.
Okay.
Now, I will tell you that some of the paragraph numbering got kind of funny here, and I think there were two paragraph Ds in this. And the second one was a matter that we were discussing that I think might be resolved. But what this second D requires is that all taxes, any taxes, permits, licenses, fees, or other expenses charged by the county to ODPC or its affiliate in relation to this agreement shall be billed to the county as an incremental charge in addition to the service fee. I understand what they're talking about, and some of these would probably not be unreasonable. Some of them, I think, are entirely inappropriate. So, for example, one of the things the county might very well do is it might very well charge it's going to charge personal property tax on vehicles and equipment and things like that that are not necessarily exclusively used on the county's property. I don't see any reason that the county should have to pay that. Now, if we're talking about sales tax for buying a length of pipe, you know, I think, or buying a quantity of chlorine or something like that, that might be something we could discuss. On October 2nd, we had not resolved this issue. That was one of the ones that was deferred to later discussion. 8.05, this is funding of the escrow. And again, this is one that deletes the language about if they put it in an interest-bearing account, they have to account for it. This requires them to put it in an interest-bearing account. 8.06 is what you might call the main event, the non-appropriation provisions. And I know you all have heard all about the debt clause and how you save things from the debt clause and things like that. The problem here is that what their non-appropriation clause says is that service fees are subject to annual appropriations. But it doesn't talk about the other obligations that the county has under the contract. If the county is indebted under this contract past the existing fiscal year, it's unconstitutional. And this change simply makes clear that any obligation to the county is subject to annual appropriation. Subsection B is deals with the occurrence of a non-appropriation event. That is, okay, some point the county says, we don't want to do this anymore. Board of Supervisors is not going to appropriate money for this contract anymore. The question is, what happens at that point? And this provision was written so that if it's terminated, if the agreement is terminated at the time of a non-appropriation event, that ODPC has an option of continuing to provide sewer service and taking service fees from the deposit and escrow funds, et cetera. There are two things that I've changed in here, and that is, in the event of a non-appropriation event which is not associated with or caused by a material breach on ODPC's part, then they can go forward, but they can only do it to the extent of monies appropriated by the board in that year. Again, that's a debt clause issue. But the other thing is, if there's let's say the board says ODPC is in breach of this agreement, they're not providing the sewer line service they're obligated to provide. They're in breach, and therefore we're not going to appropriate this money. That is a non-appropriation event that's caused by a breach. And in that event, ODPC doesn't have these rights. This is a deletion of subparagraph 4. And this language, I think, is confusing and inconsistent. It talks about a non-appropriation event, and then it talks about if the county doesn't comply with the agreement regarding a non-appropriation event, as specified in 806, it's an event of default. I think it's inappropriate to talk about an event of default with respect to a non-appropriation event. And then the final one in that subsection is a default occurring in any of the utility agreements. I've simply deleted number 4 and taken number 5 and moved it up to 4. And I've made clear at the end, adding a section, that failure to pay due to a non-appropriation event should not be considered an event of default. I think we clearly cannot agree to anything other than that. 9.02, this deals with the breach, duties on breach and remedies for breach, and this gives the various options. And if 9.02A is in the event that ODPC is in breach, and what it does is it requires ODPC, the way I have reworded it, requires ODPC to remedy the breach, cure the breach, and be obligated to reimburse the county for the consequences of the breach, or allows the county the option to terminate the agreement by providing notice to ODPC. So again, the way it's worded before, if ODPC is in breach, ODPC gets paid. And I think it's entirely inappropriate to have a party that's in default being required to be paid. A court may award something for it, but not necessarily. And it certainly shouldn't be paid unqualifiedly if it's in breach. Then, in the event of a default, the way they have it, the way they have it covered is that as long as there's a default by the county, ODPC can terminate the agreement and the other agreements. And of course, the other agreements are not necessarily in ODPC's control, because Aqua's in control of the bulk water, for example. And the county is then obligated to reimburse ODPC for all costs to cover actual damages and costs, including all the costs of the engineering project, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's unconstitutional, because it requires payment of something that's not appropriate. The change in C is grammatical. Next one, little III. This is for recovery of expenses if there's a dispute. And I've inserted the word reasonable with respect to reasonable engineering and reasonable attorney's fees. I think most of the time the court's going to require that anyway, because if you come in and you say, my lawyer costs $4,000 an hour, I want you to make them pay me $50,000. The judge is going to say $4,000 is an unreasonable fee. I'm not going to award that. But it's one thing the judge could do is, I'm not going to award it at all, because it doesn't say reasonable, I'll only enforce reasonable fee.
Mr. Chairman, if this is costing us $4,000 an hour, can we hurry this up?
Well, the speed of my conversation will be related to the rate of the compensation. The subsection 4 is, again, requiring the county to pay for things that are not appropriate. Section 10 is the conflict resolution, and Mrs. Booker, this is where there's reference to the conflict committee. And what this essentially does, first of all, is it says in the event there's a conflict, you know, there's disagreement as to whether contract's being performed properly or either party is performing, there's a committee that's basically a negotiating committee to try to resolve the conflict. The committee, it isn't binding on either side. That is to say, if you go to the committee and the committee can't resolve it, then you go forward with other resolutions. But this is an opportunity to try to work out agreements if you can. So I think that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. Now, at the end, this is the one that hung us up in our discussion, and it's the one that I feel very strongly about. This language is not the same that's in the contract, the clean copy that you have here, because this is where you instructed me to have it read that the permissible venue and jurisdiction for the resolution of any and all disputes arising out of this agreement shall be in the Circuit Court of Fluvanna County, Virginia, or as permissible by law. That's the language that you see in your clean copy. That's not in this language. I have left in the following sentence, and that is, the claims against the county are to be resolved under the Claims Act. I'm not entirely happy with that. I can't tell you that if that were the only problem, I would necessarily reject this. I have concerns about it, because that's lawyer weasel language. And I'm a lawyer, and I use weasel language sometimes. I know how to use it, and I don't like it when it's weaseling my side. So I'm not entirely happy with it, but I won't say I'd reject it out of hand. Section 13 deals with budgeting and appropriations. What this says basically is it requires the county to go through the budgeting process in a particular way. I don't think you can require that. I don't think you can tell a future board that it's got to follow a particular procedure for budgeting. So I have deleted that. I've also deleted the statement that the the county's going to include, intends to, I don't have a problem with intends to include, because that you could change your mind, or a future board could change its mind. But it talks about payment of the service fee. I've included all obligations under the contract. Then I've deleted all this this language about how the board is to go through the budgeting process. I've left in the last sentence, which requires the county to notify ODPC in the event that any of these expenses are not included in the budget. 14.01 is a these are things that are probably not a problem. They probably would be done routinely, but they ought to be. It ought to be set out in here, and that, these deal with insurance. And there's public the added things are public liability insurance requirement and a workman's compensation insurance requirement. I don't want us to be in a position that if for any reason, and I don't anticipate this would happen, but it's happened to us before, so I don't want it to happen again. If ODPC, for whatever reason, didn't have appropriate workman's comp insurance, I don't want us to have to pay for it. So I put in a requirement to do that. And then the last additional paragraph is that at the end, ODPC has to require in its subcontracts that subcontractors provide workman's comp as required by statute. There again, I don't want to be paying. There's a concept called statutory employer, and I don't want us to be a statutory employer for any of these people. They need to have their own insurance. Those are the changes in the sewer line agreement. If you have questions, I'll try to get those. Otherwise, we'll move on to water agreement. Now, this one will go faster because most of these are simple.
Any questions at this point in time? Mm-hmm. Mr. Payne?
2.06, this is a water line agreement now. 2.06 and 2.07 are similar to, I think it was similar to the analogous provisions of the sewer line agreement. So they're simply same rationale, same change. 3.01 is the same thing, making the language consistent about using defining the terms. 3.03 again is the whether there's agreement with the final alignment of the water lines. Same thing as with the sewer line. 3.05 is again, these are all the changes. If parties agree that it's appropriate to go forward, they shall go forward. If county wants to go forward, ODPC doesn't. ODPC pays us our expenses. If ODPC wants to go forward and the county doesn't, county has to pay them. And then the provision, if we disagree, we basically split the bait. Approval of final design, that language is the same as the sewer line language. So is the change order issue in 408. 403 again is the PPEA requirement. 4.09 is a PPEA requirement. Statement of completion again is the same as it was in the other thing. 6.04 is interruptions, same issue there. The property owner user agreements in 704. This is not. This numbering differs in 70 in between the sewer line and the water line agreement. This is the water line agreement, the property owner user agreements, and their requirement was to have 120,000 gallon per day as a precondition to their obligations. And I have restored the language that they proposed earlier. And that is, we have to have a minimum of 30 property owners agreed to connect to the water project with an aggregate volume of those 30 property owners, not less than 15,000 gallons per day. And again, if there's a non-appropriation event, we assign those contracts to ODPC. Service district is, I think it's identical, it's certainly substantially identical to the sewer line service agreement, the grandfathering and whatnot. The termination for failure of free condition is the same as the other contract. The service fee payable by the county to ODPC in 8.01, they have stated this as an annual figure, and I have changed that to a monthly figure. The numbers are, the monthly figure is 12 times the monthly figure is the annual figure they gave. The reason I did that is because I don't want to have a dispute about if there's a termination for non-appropriation when that becomes effective. So it'll come in the fiscal year. It may be that the effective date doesn't correspond to the fiscal year. So let's say it becomes effective January 1, and the board terminates for non-appropriation as of June 30th. I don't want there to be an argument that we owe a year's worth in that period. We simply owe, in this case, 6 months. So the numbers don't change. It's how you it's how you compute the liability based on those numbers.
Mr. Payne, would you go back to the other one where you talked about how much water, when they had 120,000 and you, could I?
Yeah, the old one was 30 users and 15,000 gallons.
30 users.
They had, the language that I have underlined here was the language that they proposed in their previous draft.
Okay.
And I simply restored that on the basis that
they had it in a previous, and then they went up to 120.
That's right.
Gallons, and so you put that back, the first
right.
one back.
Now, I know that doesn't matter.
The rationale for 120,000 gallons was that that was what would make the water line wash at the end of the day. The concern that they would have is that if you only did 15,000 gallons along that line, future Board of Supervisors could very well restrict growth along that corridor entirely, which would mean that the water system in and of itself would not be profitable to operate.
Well, that's the problem with this is, again, this is a risk issue. And if we are required to get commitments for 120,000 gallons per day, and we can't do that, that would put us in breach. If we are required to get a smaller figure, which I think would be much easier, then we're not in breach. As long as we want to keep operating this system, it's in our interest to maximize the customer base. So the point about this is a question of allocation of risk between the parties. And in my judgment, the 120,000 is an unreasonable, represents an unreasonable risk to the county. The only way that Mr. Kenny, I think, stated what ODPC's comment on this would be, their concern would be if we don't get 120,000 gallons, it's not a viable system. Well, we want it to be a viable system if we're going forward. So we'll certainly try to do that. But it's not in anybody's interest to go into this intending to fail. On the other hand, it's not in the county's interest to have us in breach if we can't achieve it. That's why I think this is more appropriate. This is clearly not a matter that has been agreed on.
Yes. Mr. Payne, would it be correct to say that it's not a question of breach, it would be a simple termination of the contract? It wouldn't be necessarily a breach, it's just a termination of the contract.
No, we're in breach.
With penalties described, or is it just that the contract dissolved?
Well, it's a precondition.
Correct.
Let's put it that way. So if we don't get it, then
we pay costs.
Yeah, according to them, we would pay costs.
So, but on the flip side too, it was a safety valve on our end that if we could not produce, if we weren't committing to growth along the corridor, if we could not produce 120,000 gallons, we'd no longer be a party to the to the service agreement, period.
My concern is not the 120,000 figure. My concern is that it's a precondition to the agreement. I have, if this is to be successful at all, mm-hmm. you're going to have a substantial volume of user, and 15,000 is obviously not enough.
Correct.
My problem is it may take a while to build that up, because we don't have 120,000 gallons users sitting there right now. And my concern about this is getting it to the point where if we get it so that it's 15,000 and growth occurs to build it up so that it is viable, then it's okay. If it gets to the point where we simply can't go forward because at the outset we don't have 120,000 gallons, I think that's imprudent. Because what we end up with is we've overcommitted ourselves on the front end. And I think expecting 120,000 gallon users before a drop of water runs through the pipeline is sufficiently unlikely as to be imprudent to require.
And the original contracts, and through about five or six iterations, didn't include any of this language at all. It was added. The 30 users and 15,000 gallons was added in early summer, either the June or July versions, and then the August versions included the 120,000 gallons. I clearly understand the intent to have a viable system. The concern would be, what if we can't produce that 120 when we walk away from that agreement, or they walk away from the agreement because we can't produce the 120? What happens to the deposits that have been paid and the expenses that have been paid? The deposit, I think, would be lost, as well as we may be required to pay expenses back to whatever period. Well, it depends on what the line is.
At least to some extent.
At least to some extent, right.
The mutual protection is involved in that, though. I mean, because from our perspective as a county, obviously you don't want to proceed with the water pipeline at that rate if you know you're not going to get anywhere close to 120,000 gallons.
Well, you're exactly right. And that's the thing, I think. That's what I mean about allocation of risk.
Right.
When it's in the interest of both parties, if this contract goes forward, it's in the interest of both parties to maximize the number of users up to the maximum supply.
So your primary concern isn't necessarily that it's 120,000 gallons. It's unreasonable to include it if both parties are interested in growing
right.
and growth along the line.
Right.
If we could have 120,000 gallons for the customers lined up ahead of time, that's a win-win. It'd be uh-huh. really, really good. I'm just suggesting that because there's nothing been developed yet, it's pretty hard to get those kind of commitments on the front end, but we certainly want to be there. I just don't want it to tie us to a dollar value loss if we didn't achieve that, because remember, when we don't achieve this and we walk away from this, we say in this agreement we will do everything reasonable to help ensure that Aqua Virginia can maintain that system and keep it being viable and go forward. I'm not sure that we can stop Aqua Virginia from going forward with putting the system in and us paying for the deposit, whatever other costs, because we're supposed to agree that if we go away from the contract, if we get out of the contract, that the system remains under Aqua's purview as part of their SEC allowed service territory.
Correct.
I think the point of this is that if we were to go and adopt a service district ordinance today, which, by the way, ain't going to happen, but if we were to adopt this today, we probably don't have. I think it's fair to say we don't have 120,000 that we could make hookup, because the grandfathering provision means if you're sitting there and you got a well, we can't make you hook up.
Correct.
So if we, and that's what's up there now from our perspective. What we're looking for is when the shopping center comes in, or the office building or the factory or whatever comes in, we can make them hook up. So I'm not saying these numbers are unreasonable, but they're unreasonable on the front end.
I guess this is something we'll leave to the next board to go ahead and determine whether or not. I mean, I don't view this as a showstopper. I think that 120,000 gallons is quite reasonable for that area with the time frame involved. But, you know, I mean, this is a negotiation point for the next board. I don't view it just a showstopper one way or the other.
In looking at examples and comparisons, I look at across the border, and with everything that's built out there, we can't get to this number in any kind of short time unless there's a magic that happens.
Well, it wouldn't be a magic; it would be development.
Well, development, so, yes, but I mean, but on the Louisa side of Zion's Crossroads, are there 137,000 gallons of water a day at the end of this year, mm-hmm. with all the build out, including the Spring Creek subdivision, after 13 years of build up. We could be lucky and find just the right kind of development.
It's not quite 13 years of build out. I mean, it only really started growing in about 2008, 2009.
Well, so these are LCWA figures. It goes from zero to a little bit to
still 6 years.
But still, I mean, you're also talking about a bunch of box stores too, and so that's where it's a different type of growth or development than otherwise the mixed use that we'd be looking for.
That includes entire Spring Creek subdivision. No, they're not fully built out.
Spring Creek is a big subdivision.
Yes.
By our standards, it's a big subdivision.
And I think what it's worth, I agree with what Mr. Payne's saying and what Steve's saying regarding it. I think it is an unreasonable risk to have that in front of you.
Uh, 7.09 is again the that's termination for failure precondition, same thing as in the other agreement. Same thing with the 8.01, the service fee being calculated monthly instead of annually. Then the rest of 8.01B deals with the requirement of keeping deposits and service fees and things like that in interest-bearing accounts. D is the taxes, permits, licenses issued, same one as we had before. And again, you might be able to work something out with that, because part of it, allowing them to do that is in some cases, it's probably reasonable. In other cases, it's positively unlawful. And
Mr. Payne, not to interrupt, we're at 6:57. Are there any concerns about continuing the meeting as is? Do we have to adjourn at 7?
I'm close to being done.
Okay.
Because most of this is the...
6:58.
I don't think...
Yeah.
I think it's identical.
Yeah, the most important...
Instructions to the board at this point to go ahead and take it, to, you know, allow it to, yeah. to direct staff to publish to the public so that, I mean, to publish it at this rate?
Well, we will have Mr. Payne transmit to Mr. Satterwhite. Once it becomes a proposal to them, then I'm required to publish, and we'll put it on the web with the history of it in the working papers.
Okay. Any concerns, comments, questions from the board?
No.
Mr. Weaver, are you satisfied?
Yeah.
Okay. That was all to that.
Thank you, Mr. Payne.
I think you should have a motion to direct me to transmit this to Mr. Satterwhite.
Sir, motion. Second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Chester, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. We will have to adjourn this meeting. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So may.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
And it'll take 10 minutes.
This meeting is adjourned. Now,
You want to go straight through?
You got a minute? You got 1 minute.
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I just wanted an acknowledgement that I was on time.
That's true. Your $4,000 was well spent.
Oh, cool.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yeah. I really hope everybody got the joke and didn't think that Mr. Payne actually got $4,000 or somewhere in the service.
He got five, didn't he?
He got five, you know?
We're
very generous with other people's money in Sylvania County, I suppose.
Mr. Chairman, we can delay the start for five minutes or so if you want to get a restroom break.
Yeah, I think it'll take a few minutes off.
Mr. Olenbrock?
Yeah.
Would you like your 5 minutes of private time?
that would be good.
Take five. Take five. Okay, we'll go ahead and call to order at 7 o'clock.
And hold it to five, Mr. Chester. Got to get out of here.
Yeah, the nicotine just kicked in, huh?
Okay.
Electric.
Okay. We'll go ahead and call this regular meeting of the Savannah County Board of Supervisors to order. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
Pledge of Allegiance.
pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I guess we're moving directly into special presentations.
On behalf of staff, I would just like to start out and tell our two departing supervisors, thank you very much for all your hard work during the last 4 years and for putting up with us. But we do have some special presentations that we'll start with our vice chairman, Mr. Ellenbrock.
We're going to start with
them. Okay, sorry, Mr. Kenny.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Chester, you get to come up front with me, so.
Don't trip.
Let's see if I can give this back to you in as good form as it came to me.
I'll start out with some personal comments real quick, obviously, Joe and I came in the same term in the worst economy since the Great Depression. and it was a tough battle. I know that there's a lot that we probably would have done, but not given the challenges that we had, but those are the card bands we were dealt. And if there's one thing that Mr. Chester hammered home time and time and time again, it was the need for economic development. And I think that's a message that we've probably heard. I hope this is to a large degree. But if there's one thing that Mr. Chester sort of taught me, at least on the board of supervisors, is that good people can still survive in public service. I don't think there's ever been a single instance where I have found that you've always tried to do the right thing and really dwelt on it. And even after the decision was made, you would take the time to go back and really consider it. That takes a lot of courage, it takes a lot of conscience, and I really respected that, and I learned a lot from your example. The plaque reads, in appreciation to Joseph Chester, 4 years outstanding service of Havana County as the Havana District Supervisor, January 2010 to December 2013. Mr. Chester has also served in the Economic Development Commission, Havana Transportation Safety Committee, Planning Commission, Havana River Basin Commission, Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, presented by the Board of Supervisors, December 18, 2013. Thank you. Mr. Chester, thank you.
Don't go too far.
I'm trying to run. Wait.
I had to write mine out.
Pizza.
Did you get pizza?
First of all, I'll read this out and then I'll put your addition as a new book from there. It's rarely easy to write a farewell message about a colleague, especially after another elected official. What tone do I set? Since this is an awake, I guess it should be uplifting. What areas do I talk about? I suppose it's time to remember your efforts and accomplishments. So here I go. Sean filled the board leadership role from his first meeting in 2010, serving first as vice chair for 2 years and as board chairman for 2012 and 2013. In his role as our chairman, he set a very high standard for our administrative operations and ensured we stayed on track with important issues and decisions. And if you ever heard him advocate a cause, you know the depth of his personal commitment and compassion. He is eloquent beyond his years and incredibly well-read. I sometimes wonder about some of his quotes, but on quick review, I usually find it's another snippet from a classic that I probably should have known about, but I didn't. And every conversation with Sean is a chance to add another interesting piece of history, politics, religion, and other disciplines to our trivia bank. Sean helped lead the board and other county and our county through several years of particularly difficult and financial times. Throughout that time, he led the creation of important additions to our budget process by advocating for the creation of capital reserve funds for the county and school maintenance, for school bus replacement, and for sheriff's department vehicles. He also served on the Affordable Housing Task Force, the Piedmont Workforce Council, the Thomas Jefferson Area Community Criminal Justice Board, as our County Emergency Services Director, and as the County Legislative Contact to the Virginia Association of Counties. In addition to Sean's dedication and hard work as supervisor for the Columbia District, both he and his wife, Melissa, have been active volunteers in our community. And with their ever-growing family, they can provide a lot of volunteer hands and hours. If you need a spare baseball team, just see the Kennys. Sean's been a privilege to have you as a colleague on the board, and we have appreciated your leadership through these difficult times. We'll miss you, but we also realize that you have other opportunities and challenges ahead of you. Congratulations. All right, in appreciation to Sean Kenny for 4 years of outstanding service to Cabana County as Columbia District Supervisor, January 10th through December 13th, serving as chairman for 2012-2013. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Again, to reiterate on behalf of staff, thank you very much both for your service and for your support and for your guidance. And it has been a difficult 4 years for both of you on your terms, I know, with the changes in America. And I think we're back on right footing, but it's been a long haul for you. So thank you.
And I have something to say.
Yes, ma'am.
It's been an interesting 4 years. I knew Joe before he came on the board because he and I had done some work with some leadership with some teenagers one summer. We taught a leadership class. That was before he was on the board, so I kind of knew him. I met Sean at some of the debates, and I said, oh, my God. This young man is, where did he come from? So, So I invited him to the cadet for a lunch, and I said to him, you really frighten me. So we, first of all, the way we made a connection, because we've been like this, you know, I'm over here, and we're like a rubber band. But before we had breakfast, we held hands, and I said a prayer. And I think that prayer has kind of kept our relationship kind of stormy at times, but yet still we made a connection. I have such a connection to Joe because Joe has been just with economic development, and he, you know, he speaks for a lot of board members who have worked hard. Jerome Booker, who started 30-some years ago. And I think we ought to be proud that we, with you all and with Don and Bob, that we have moved toward economic development probably closer than we ever have. And I'm on the board for 2 more years. And I just hope and pray that we can move that further so that you all, what you started, that you can see that it's going to get there. That's my pledge to you, that we're going to work really hard to try to do it, not only for you, but for the people of Fluvanna County. There are so many things I could talk about, you know, school budget, taxes, and all of that. And no matter how we felt about certain things, we still have a pretty good working relationship. And I think Sean made me 10 years younger because I try to keep up with that vocabulary. And I'm gonna miss the preaching. But it is, and I'm looking forward to the new board. And I know Bob and Don and I will be working very hard, and we'll be thinking about you. And I just hope that whatever you do, I know you working in school and you're doing a lot of things, and Joe, is doing his, he considers this a retirement. This is his four-year retirement from the board. This is his third retirement. And I know that he and Helen, and with his grandbaby, that they are going to enjoy. But please, don't stay too far away from us. Let's see your face, and please call us with any suggestions, and because you'll see things from a different perspective out there, sitting out there. And you're going to be very valuable as you sit out in the community, and we need that kind of thing to keep us in reality and keep us on task. And so it's kind of like a bittersweet day. They didn't put any tissues on the table, but
I was going to. I was going to bring some Kleenex right. for the crowd.
But you do. You when you're on the board, you know, the last board, you just get an attachment. There's Marvin back there. I got an attachment to Marvin and John and everybody. You can't help but have those kinds of feelings because we all are wanting the best thing for the county. That's our goal. So. That's all I have to say.
It's been been an honor and privilege working with each and every single one of you. I can assure you, you certainly taught me quite a bit, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity. There we go. Okay.
Mr. Nichols, County Administrator report.
It will be brief. Just a few things. I gave you all a sheet about some additional items on the agenda tonight. I'll give you some explanations quickly. The Planning Commission appointment, you had deferred it at the last meeting because you wanted to go out to get a larger candidate pool. You've actually gotten an additional candidate in. I emailed that to you ahead of time, so that's on your unfinished business for tonight. There are two new items for potential consideration, the James River Water Authority board appointment and the Columbia Task Force appointment. The Columbia Task Force specifically normally had a supervisor. Since Mr. Kenny is no longer will no longer be in office after the end of the year, there was a question about making that appointment. The JRWA I requested because I'm not sure exactly what you want to do with it. Mr. Chester's term ends at the end of this year. The JRWA, the next JRWA meeting, and there's a lot going on with the JRWA, the next meeting is January 7th before the next board meeting. So if you don't fill that appointment, then at that meeting there would just be two representatives from Fluvanna County, myself and Mr. Gomez, and then three from Louisa. I don't think there's any particular risk there. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just suggesting that if you want a third board member, it is not required to be a Board of Supervisors member, and the Louisa County contingent does not have an elected official. It has the county administrator and two citizen representatives. So I brought that up in case you wanted to make a change on that tonight. And there are two candidates that would be available for consideration, and I've got that file for you. But those are the three things that are listed there. And so when you get to unfinished business and new business, if you choose to consider those, fine. If not, we'll move on past those. But those are the items that I thought you might need to get taken care of before the end of the year. I want to introduce our new Planning and Zoning Administrator, Mr. Jason Stewart. Jason is on board now, started on Monday, got thrown into fire and sat in this chair on Monday night at his first Planning Commission meeting. It was a long day for him on his first day. He comes to us from as assistant city manager and planning director in the city of Emporia, and has a very good and long history in planning, going up through successively more responsible positions. And we're really pleased to have him on board with us. He brings his master's degree of education and multiple years of service in planning and city and town management to our county, and we're really pleased to have him. And so he's on board officially as of Monday, and he'll be around campus. So, Jason, welcome. Please,
thank you.
Yes, sir. The holiday music celebration in the village that is sponsored by the Historical Society actually went off without a hitch last Saturday. It was wet and cold and rainy and windy and things, but it actually worked. There was a good number of people there. We had a number of community organizations. The community singers were fantastic, and the Kenny clan lit the Christmas tree. But particular thanks to Judy Michelson from the Historical Society, and then on our staff, Ms. Lenher, the treasurer, Mrs. Weaver from our office, and Ms. Parrish from the Human Resources were out there for about 5 hours on Saturday in the very cold and wet weather but providing hot cider and cookies and just a nice time for everyone that showed up. And so I really appreciate it. We hope that we have better weather next time, but it was really a nice event that day. So weather, not so good, but the event was great. And the cookies were healthy, to say the least. Public Library is now a partner with NASA. It's pretty cool. We're the only one in the area that partners with NASA. We're part of the NASA Space Place.
How do we do that?
Well, there's a program, as it says up here, there's a program that the NASA partners with localities, with museums, with libraries, with planetariums, to be able to be part of their organization to get information. They send flyers and pictures and posters and things to the organizations that partner with them so they can have events and programs for the kids and for citizens that come into the library. So we're going to have Ms. Hoffman's going to have a big display, like the sample one you see on here. There'll be a display in our public library as well. We'll have lots of things from NASA, and I think they'll be pretty interesting over the next few days because you've got 3 spacewalks coming up. They have to do some repairs on the International Space Station, so they'll be in the news quite a bit with 3 spacewalks between now and Christmas. But anyway, this is a new thing, and it's the only library in the area that is partnered with NASA on this program. Wow.
Would there ever be anything like hands-on, maybe telescopes or anything
They already do that. Mrs. Hoffman can jump up here and explain, but they already have a star watch and moon gazing and in the fall, in October.
They have that in Charlottesville, I know.
We do. Moonlight Madness is every year, and it's one day where everybody around the world sets up their telescopes and observes, and we take surveys of what we see, and everybody sends them in.
It's a pretty popular event here.
Yeah, oh, good.
We have people donate all the telescopes, and we wrote a grant to get one for the library. So.
Very good. Cool. Thank you.
And then today was the annual senior holiday luncheon down at Parks and Rec building, and Mr. Ellenbrook and Mrs. Booker were be able to be there for that as well. But we really want to thank Carolyn Richardson. Carolyn's retiring soon from Parks and Rec staff, but she's been doing this since she's been on staff for a number of years, and it's a big event every year. It was even bigger this year. There were almost 60 or just over 60 participants this year. Great fun. Santa Claus, of course, visited. There were a lot of door prizes, a lot of gift bags to walk away with for those that were 55 or older, and a really good lunch. And it was a lot of fun, but we really want to thank a lot of the community partners. You know, JABA and Jaunt both participate and assist. E.W. Thomas for food and for staffing. The Fork Union Rotary Interact Club, the kids really did a great job again today. There were 5 youngsters there that were helping out. I think one of them is out of shot in Parks and Rec Advisory Board there, too.
Yes, uh-huh. Hey.
Right. And then other community volunteers that were there. And it was really a well-done event and much better weather than it was for the village celebrations, though. It was nice, but another good event. And we really appreciate Ms. Richardson and the amazing work she's done on keeping this going. But she also does other things through the year, like the father and daughter dance and the mother and son dance, and sets those up too. And then just a few things that are still ongoing that we're looking at and doing reviews on. And any questions that I can answer?
Questions for the county administrator?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Weaver?
No.
Nope.
Fine.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nichols. Go ahead and move on to public comment. Again, please remember to keep your comments directed to the board on topic and within 5 minutes. Is there anyone wishing to address the board? Mr. Patterson.
My name is Sam Patterson. I'm from the Palmyra District. I'm sorry I didn't see the notes that the Aqua Virginia started early at 6 o'clock, so I'm going to try to focus on the Aqua Plan. Obsession, the definition. A compulsive preoccupation with a fixed idea, often accompanied by symptoms of anxiety, driven by an unreasonable idea that forces the domination of one thought to a persistent idea. And unfortunately, that is exactly what we've witnessed with the Flavanna Board of Supervisors since they've become obsessed with this incredibly one-sided $20 million Aqua Virginia pipeline proposal that everyone with any business or legal sense has repeatedly stated is illegal and not in the best interest of the county. In fact, nothing in this county has ever united Democrats, Republicans, and Independents alike as the actions taken by the BOS in the last 3 months, and particularly against this Aqua Virginia plan. In fact, as of the November meeting, we have really passed into the surreal. The BOS members have violated stated Virginia laws and statutes and constitutions We have seen them engage in illegal votes and attempt to approve an illegal contract. VOS has violated our public notice and our review laws and violated required contract notice and reviews by our county attorney, Mr. Payne, all to surreptitiously attempt to vote upon and attempt to approve a $20 million pipeline in November of 2013. Further, what's most distressing to me and attorneys that I've consulted is that it is clear from the BOS's listed action items dated November 20th, 2013, that BOS members had engaged in secret contract negotiations with Aqua Virginia or their proxies by explicitly excluding BOS members Ohlenbrock and Weaver and the county attorney and the county administrator, county staff, and the public from these very same secret negotiations to revise an old contract. I will now state categorically that any contract voted upon in November or tonight or in the future by any BOS members which attempts to bind Fluvanna County and Aqua Virginia into any type of contractual agreement is null and void. This is according to numerous state and legal statutes which Mr. Payne has recited over and over. It is all well and good to have us review and cost us more money and more time of Mr. Payne's, who has very clearly stated, for the record, Aqua Virginia's $20 million contract over 20 years is a long-term major county general obligation which requires a voter referendum under the Virginia Constitution, Article 7, Section 10, Paragraph 4B. And Mr. Payne has made that very clear to all of you. This type of negotiation cannot commence until you have had the voters of this county approve such a plan to be negotiated upon. Folks, it all comes down to one thing. We are uncompetitive. We have, right now, our only competitor is Louisa County. I've not heard an articulate conversation about this. We're at 80 cents with our personal property, with our property tax. They're at 64 cents. We are at $4.15 for our business property tax. They're at $1.90. That's 118% higher. No one is going to come to our county until we rectify that competitiveness issue first. And that's not what's being done. But as Mr. Nichols so well pointed in his June article to you all, the Aqua contract, and Mr. Payne has also stated it, has so many defects that it cannot be cured. It cannot be fixed. But that is in advance of the fact that we voters must have our say first. We must be required to have our say as a voter referendum to approve the contract negotiations to go forward. I would ask that both this board and the future incoming board please take under advisement these cautionary notes that Mr. Payne and Mr. Nichols have issued regarding the Aqua Virginia contract, but also in particular on the fact that this vote cannot be voted upon until the public has given you approval to do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Anyone else wishing to address the board? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the first round of public comment. Moving into our public hearing, SUP 1308. Mr. Tucker.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this item is SUP 1308, a special use permit request from Mary Marks for a commercial kennel. And it's with respect to 26.602 acres of tax map 21, section 12, parcels 4 and 5. There are two adjacent parcels that were consolidated earlier in the year, zoned agricultural in the Columbia Election District and the Rural Preservation Community Planning Area. Ms. Marks is proposing a commercial kennel with not more than 20 dogs at one time. There is a residential dwelling there. Ms. Marks intends to live there. And what she is proposing is a 22 by 36 detached garage that would serve as the dog daycare with an adjacent 300 by 300 fenced in area. This is a location overview. Again, zoned A1, is why it's before the board tonight. Commercial kennels require a special use permit in the A1 district. This is an aerial photograph. The property is the two adjacent properties here on Bobby Farms Lane off of Hollins Road. A few photographs for the board. In the background, in the upper right-hand side of the screen, you see the dwelling. This would be a commercial kennel on 26 acres off Hollins Road, 22 by 36 building would facilitate not more than 20 dogs. And property and building are surrounded by substantial vegetation that may reduce potential noise. And the noise exposure will be further mitigated through the soundproof insulation used in the walls and ceilings in the new building. Again, commercial kennels are allowed by special use permit in the A1 district. Zoning ordinance allows one accessory dwelling unit per parcel, and which would be similar to the building that she's proposing with conjunction with this operation. In conclusion, it's a request for a commercial kennel with keeping more than 20 dogs would not be visible from Hollins Road, and the board may want to consider noise, dust, potential increase in traffic. Staff isn't aware of any additional impacts that could be associated with the kennel. And suggested motions on the screen, and applicant is here this evening if you have any questions.
Questions, Mr. Tugwell?
No.
No? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tugwell. We'll go ahead and open it up for public hearing. Again, please remember to keep your comments directed to the board on topic within 5 minutes. Is anyone wishing to address the board at this point in time? Seeing none, we will close that round of public hearing, bring the conversation back to the board.
Mr. Chair, I move that the Board of Supervisors approve a special use permit request to allow the commercial kennel pursuant to Fluvanna County Code Section 22.42.2 with respect to 26.602 acres of tax map 21, Section 12, parcels 4 and 5. If approved, subject to the 11 conditions listed in the staff report.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Chester, seconded by Mr. Ullenbrock. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. No other items for public hearing. Moving on to action matters. Tab H, extension of code enforcement officers evaluation period. Mr. Popowitz.
In advance of him speaking, just note that the revised motion is on the screen. We put the dollar values in there too. So the revised motion is different than what's in your package, but this is the one that's a little more specific.
Okay.
So, I don't know if there's anyone else to talk about it.
That'll work. Mr. Nichols. In your packet, of course, there's we went through with the code compliance projects. Mr. Miller has given you a monthly detail of some of the things that we've been working on. Couple items I'd like to kind of point out. We have been working with our special use permit follow-ups, for different types of special use permits. We have to go back and look at the make sure they're in compliance. Those were kind of behind before we added hours to Mr. Miller's week. I kind of felt like in looking at what he has done over the past 6 months that he has been able to not only catch those up but also find other violations, as he's divided the area or the entire county up into different districts to find violations as he can see from the road or from different areas. He's also been very helpful in other areas such as soil erosion and those types of things in some of our other projects. In the future, if there's other types of water right-of-ways and things like that, that's under his purview and certainly would be something that we need to consider for his position, since that would be something that we'd probably need not also with planning but also in conjunction with public works and other things. So with that, what we're proposing is, since Mr. Stewart is fairly new here, that we give him at least another 90 days to evaluate his employee, notwithstanding the fact that we'd continue to also put these work summaries together and continue. So,
sure. We have a motion? Or any questions for Mr. Popowitz at this point?
What is this position? You haven't done the budget, though, have you?
No, this position is a 20-hour per week position. Mm-hmm. A number of months ago, last spring, and we started actually July 1st,
right.
A number of months ago, we extended to 28 hours per week. so we could get some extra time to actually do code enforcement and do inspections. It's actually worked quite well. There's 5 or 6 months of reports in your package, but I don't want to come back to you now and say, well, let's make it permanent or extend it when we've got a brand new planning director on board, and to retain it for 90 days so we can then come back with a formal report from the new planning director saying, yes, I recommend this stay at 20 hours, 28 hours, or we recommend go to full time because we need it for ENS or for stormwater or for new development we may have going on. That'll give the Mr. Stewart time to be able to develop that proposal. And then the cost of this from now through your March 19th meeting March 19th, I think, and this would be the end of the pay period right after that, March 22nd, it'd be about a $1,500 cost to retain him at 28 hours, which is what the temp period was for, 28 hours. This just extends it for about 90 days.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what he did before, but I can see these reports. What does Mr. Scott Miller, right?
Yes, sir.
What is his evaluation of how he feels about what he has done and the need for?
Yeah. In doing kind of an interview with Mr. Miller on what he has been able to accomplish, one of the big things was being able to catch up the special use permits. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. We've had several in backlog that we had to go back in and reevaluate that you folks had approved several years ago. And, of course, we're required to go back and make sure that they're in compliance. And that is the biggest thing that he's been able to keep up with and also take our backlog or start whittling down our backlog.
Right. So it seems to me that we don't want to go back. We should want to go stay where we are, go forward, because all we're going to do is back up again. You know what I mean?
In your budget package, when you get the county administrator's proposed budget mm-hmm. in the first meeting in February, you will have a proposal in there on what to do with this position for funding for fiscal year 15. But this helps us at least get Mr. Stewart a chance to look at it between now and the time I put the budget proposal together with the finance department. And while I hate extending things, we've just had turnover and I've got a new director and a new planning director, and so I think it's reasonable to let him look at it. We're certainly going to get the hours out of Mr. Miller. He's certainly going to continue to provide good support, but I'd like to have a little more comprehensive look at it with the new director. So.
Any further questions?
No.
Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chesser?
I move to extend a temporary expansion of work hours of the Code of Compliance Officer from the current test period ending December 31st, 2013 to March 22nd, 2014 at an increased cost of $1,581. Such funds to come from the established FY14 county planning budget.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Chesser, seconded by Mr. Ollenbrock. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Thank you. Tab I, reappointment of the Board of Zoning Appeals. Mr. Nichols.
A variety of successive appointments here, appointments or reappointments. In this case, we have just one applicant who is the current member, Mr. Peter von Kaiserling. He's on the BZA and wishes to be reappointed.
We have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to recommend, to the Circuit Court that they appoint Peter von Kaiserling to the Board of Zoning Appeals, with the term to begin January the 1st, 2014, and to terminate December the 31st, 2018.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Weaver, second by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Tab J, appointment to the Flavanna Partnership for Aging.
In this case, I'm pleased to see that we actually have an applicant. We've been trying for a number of months to get applicants for the Flavanna Partnership for Aging. I think one of the things that's energizing us a little bit is Mr. Smith and Bob's work on trying to get community input. They have the community meetings and trying to change the way we work with JABA to get senior programs out across the county, not just in one location. And so Ms. Foreman would be a good addition to the Flavanna Partnership for Aging as we kind of re-energize that and move forward with senior programs in our county.
I did talk to her last night, and she was quite excited about the prospects of being appointed on the board. So I would like to make that motion if the board's ready.
Mr. Weaver.
I move to appoint Deborah Foreman to the Flavanna County Partnership for Aging Cunningham District position with a term beginning January the 1st, 2014, and ending on December the 31st, 2017.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Ollenbrock. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Tab K, appointment to the Jefferson Area Disability Services Board. Ms. Nichols.
So So in this case, the one applicant for this position, Mr. Frederick Rick Kelly, is the applicant has submitted a request to serve on the Jefferson Area Disability Services Board.
Okay, I move to appoint Frederick Rick Kelly to the Jefferson Area Disability Service Board at large position with a term to begin immediately and to terminate on December 31st, 2016.
Second. Motion's made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Tab L, appointment, reappointment, Social Services Board. Mr. Nichols.
That front row guy wants to be reappointed to the Social Services
Board. Does he?
Yes.
Gosh.
Go ahead, Mr.
So in this case, we have one applicant request appointment to the Social Services Board. That's Mr. Len Gardner, who's a current member, and this would be a reappointment.
I move to reappoint Glenn Gardner to the Social Services Board with a term to begin January 1, 2014 and to terminate December 31st, 2017.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Ollenbrock. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Tab M. Appointment, Parks and Recreation Advisory Board.
We have an applicant for this position. This replaces Scott Marshall, who recently resigned from the Parks and Rec Advisory Board. He still remains on the Economic Development Authority. But the applicant for this position is Mr. David Wood.
We have a motion.
Yeah, I was looking at Mr. Wood's application, and he has a lot of work with biking. And we did have someone on the board that was really Mr. Scandamore.
Scandamore.
And he had an accident, and he, I don't know if he's still paralyzed, but he's not on that board. And it's really a gap because he was such an advocate for mountain biking and biking and he was on a rescue squad and all of those things. And Mr. Wood would be a good addition. So I move to appoint David Wood to the Parks and Rec Advisory Board with a term to begin immediately and to terminate June the 30th, 2016.
Sir, second. Motion made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Chesser. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Tab MC.
And Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission. Three applicants for this position, the current incumbent, Mr. Keith Smith, and then Mr. Robert Flood, and Ms. Deborah Curry are the three applicants for service on the Planning District Commission as citizen representative.
I move to reappoint Keith Smith to the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, citizen representative position with term beginning January 1st, 2014 to terminate December 31st, 2015.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Chesser, seconded by Mr. Ollenbrock. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Tab M, Porcupine Sanitary District.
That's a reappointment.
In this case, just one applicant, Mr. Lewis Johnson, who is also a current member, but yeah. Wishes reappointed.
Right. I move to reappoint Lewis Johnson to the Porcupine Sanitary District with term to begin January 1, 2014 and terminate December 31, 2017.
Is there a second?
Second. Second.
Motion made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Ollenbrock. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. That concludes our action matters. Moving into presentations, Tab O, FY13 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. Ms. Horlacher.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm here to give you the results of the fiscal year 13, ended June 30th, 2013. Just first of all, just an overview of how we started out FY13 with an adopted budget of just over $66 million, with a little over half of our expenditures for schools, a third for county, and then CIP and other. And revenue sources mainly 53% local, and the state contributing the second highest amount. Our local sources, as you all know, are primarily real property taxes, public utility taxes, and personal property taxes, with the fund balance and some other local fees filling in the rest of the local revenue. comprehensive annual financial report, the CAFR. You have a hard copy in front of you. In the CAFR, we tend to focus on the general fund. That's our main operating fund. So the results for FY13 are shown here in a pie chart, and then following in numbers. Of course, again, the biggest source of revenue is our general property taxes, which includes real estate, the utilities, and personal property. The state, again, being the second largest source of our general fund revenues, and those funds mainly come from the comp board, also funds for our health and welfare services, social services, and our CSA. And among our top four local revenues, of course, we have real estate taxes, personal property taxes, public service, and then local sales tax. Not by a lot, but this was our highest year ever of local sales tax collection. And I do have a graph of that. So it seems like we leveled off during the Great Recession and are slowly starting to pick up in sales tax revenue, which is a good sign for times ahead. Now, general fund expenditures, here's a pie chart, and then the next chart shows numbers. And our highest priorities, as in our all local governments, education, public safety, and health and welfare. What is a little different in Fluvanna County is that debt service also ranks up there just as much as public safety, and a little more than health and welfare. So here you have the results of our general fund expenditures. Compare it to budget. And again, education being the largest portion, health and welfare, public safety, and debt service. If you compare the debt service number, 5.8 that we spent, compared to the budget of 7.9, that was the result of the refinancing this year. And so, hence, a lot of savings in fiscal year 13. So when you come to the bottom line, we had $39 million in revenues and $35.6 million in expenditures. So we had a good result of $3.3 million excess of revenues over expenditures. We paid for some CIP items and still allowed for an increase to our fund balance of $1.4 million.
There you go.
Started with an overall fund balance of $20.2 million and ended with $21.6 million. This is the breakdown of the $21.6 million. A little over half of it is committed to CIP projects, and then the other bulk of it is the 10.2, which we consider unassigned, meaning that there's no commitments, nobody's made plans to use that money. We, per our policy, keep an unassigned balance of 7.1, almost 7.2 million. And so as of June 30th, we had an excess over our target of $3 million, which is a good place to be when the economy is unpredictable. And this is the graph of those results, the unassigned. We want to keep that being the red. The green part of it is the above policy, the 3.1. And then all the money dedicated to CIP projects, the bulk of it to the 911 project.
Go back to saying.
Oh, sorry.
I'll note on that slide that the green unassigned is not 3.1 anymore. That was at the end of June. It is $200,000 that's gone towards the Pleasant Grove House and small. I think small.
Sure, that's in this year. 2.8 now.
Yes, but this was at the end of June,
right.
The end of the fiscal year. So sure. Currently, that's not the current status. Current status is about 2.8.
Correct.
2.8 and unassigned.
Because we committed 200,000.
I just don't want people walking away from this meeting thinking we've got 3.1 in unassigned fund balance. We don't now. That was added point in
time. Yeah, but that stops right at the end of the fiscal year, per se.
That was the position
that's
on
right.
our books
that's what
at
I
the
say.
End of the fiscal year. I'm just saying today you have less balance there.
The 11 million that's committed to various projects is very small to read, but the bulk of it is for the 911 project of 7 million, and then we have a lot of other projects that are in progress now.
And this is one that I want the board in probably in January, or maybe a little later than that, but to look at very hard, to go down through this list very carefully to find out if there's anything on there that, think of SUPs that were approved by the board a year, two, three, four, five ago, but nothing's ever happened with them. Do we still have the same priority, or should the money be reassigned to something else? There are a number of things on here that may be like that. Not very many, but there are a few, and I want the board to at least make a decision to either recommit to it or then to reassign it to another purpose along the way. It's not like there's a windfall of a couple $1 million, but there are a number of items that are older.
Do we have any additional information on E911?
No, not since the last sheriff's update. Not since the last update.
So we're still holding it to 7.076.
Correct.
As such.
Correct.
So we don't have any feel, like you say, that maybe it'll be less or more? Or?
No, sir. I mean, there are some impressions, but nothing that you could bank on or use during budget season to feel comfortable with this year. By next budget season, I think you will have a much stronger position. But as it stands now with this phase of the process, it's just not far enough along to give you a good answer on it. And I think the sheriff would foot stomp that, since he and Mrs. Wilkins and others are tracking that much closer.
This is one of the things that I do know. When Sean came on board, he picked up on this quite quick, and we were really behind the ball.
Yeah.
And he got us straightened out and got this set up, got our reserves and all. And we were, I don't think we would have gotten it if you hadn't really pushed on that. So I just wanted to give you that much credit there.
Thank you, sir.
A graph of our general fund balance, the blue being the total fund balance, gone up a little this at the end of this year, and our unassigned has basically stayed the same. Our debt picture, you're all well aware of. Total debt for the county is just under $100 million. And these are the different types of debt.
Did you ever get any ranking, new ranking, where that puts us per capita on that almost $100 million? I mean, how much per capita, how it ranks in the state?
Though that will be based on the 2013 results of everybody. And so those results will be out around February or March, where the APA compares everybody.
When we get it.
So when those come out, we can report that to you. So this is basically an amortization schedule of from 2014 to 2036 of the current debt and how it will decrease over time as we pay it off. And this is a graph of the debt service. The 2013 was the low because of the refinancing, and unfortunately, the next couple years are going to it stays above 7 million for about the next 8 or 9 years, and then we drop off, start to drop off a little more dramatically.
I'm wondering on some of that small debt, whether some of that could be paid off, because we're paying something like 5 and 6% on some of the small debt I've noticed in here, where it maybe is only maybe $600,000 or something like that. I wonder if there's any thought of paying that off, and then that would give us more money into the future. Maybe use the reserve to pay that off.
Well, we could definitely look at that, and you and I should probably talk about specifically which pieces you were. It depends on the kind of debt. I mean, if it's bonds, you basically have to refinance those. And we have looked at, you know, been keeping track of interest rates and seeing if that was a good time. And we were very fortunate to catch a very good time in December of last year and do that big debt. And actually, since then, there hasn't been as great an opportunity, but we can definitely look into it.
Okay.
You could pay some off, but depending on how you want to hit your fund balance. But there isn't much left out there that can be refinanced to much to much benefit. There's a small group, but there's small groups on there. And you're going to have the balloon payment out in 2026, but we'll probably have to address that, either put money aside for it or address it before then.
And David Foley from Robinson Farmer Cox will give you the audit opinion.
Rip Van Winkle on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is David Foley. I'm a member with Robinson Farmer Cox Associates, and I was the audit manager on the county's FY13 audit this year. Included in the county's comprehensive annual financial report are three reports from us that report the results of our audit. Also, in addition to those reports included in the CAFR, we have also issued two separate letters that you should have a copy of with the hard copy of your the financial report. I'd first like to go over the three reports included in the county's CAFR. The first one is our independent auditor's report. That report is included in the financial section. It's the first page of the financial section. Our independent auditor's report here that we did perform an audit of the county's financial statements. Also in this report is we list management's responsibility, which is management is responsible for the preparation and fair presentation of the financial statements. This report lists our responsibility as auditors, which is to express an opinion on the county's financial statements, and also where we state that we did perform our audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards. Also included in this report is where we issue our opinion on the county's financial statements, and we have issued an unqualified, unmodified opinion on the county's financial statements, which is the cleanest opinion an auditor can give on a set of financial statements, meaning the county's financial statements have been prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. The other two reports that we have as part of the audit are back in the compliance section. These reports are required and done in accordance with government auditing standards. Back in the compliance section, the first page in the compliance section, our first report is our report on the county's internal control over financial reporting. That report was clean. We noted no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in the county's internal control over financial reporting. Also, the second report related to government auditor standards that we issued was our report on the county's compliance with its major federal programs. This report was clean as well. We noted no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses in the county's compliance over its major federal programs. So those are the three reports that we issued that are included in the county's financial statements. Also, we did issue two separate letters as part of our audit that do not affect our reports included in the CAFR, but do also report some additional results as part of the audit. One letter we have is our management letter. In the management letter, this issues we had a few comments and recommendations that we had as part of doing the audit. I'd like to briefly go through those with you all. The first one was related to, as part of our audit, we noted there were some electronic tax payments that were made that did not get reported in the county's general ledger. These unrecorded transactions did cause the county's balances in the county's general ledger to be incorrect, which we recommend that the county put procedures in place to ensure that all activity is captured in the general ledger. The second recommendation that we had was sort of related to the first, and that is that as the county prepares its reconciliations of its various bank accounts and balance sheet accounts, does this on a monthly basis, we recommend that these reconciliations are prepared carefully and accurately, because an accurate prepared reconciliation will catch any unposted transactions or transactions that may be posted incorrectly. The third recommendation we had was related to the counties in its third year of its MUNA system implementation, the new accounting system. During this time, you know, there's a learning curve on how transactions are processed, and during this learning curve, we recommend that both the Treasurer's Office and the Finance Department work closely together during reconciliations and other processes to hopefully make those more efficient and effective. Certainly what one office does to another, you know, what one office does affects another, and if they work closely together, you can kind of work the kinks out of some of those processes and reconciliations and make those more effective. And the last thing included in the management letter, this is to make you all aware of an upcoming GASB standard. There is a new GASB that's going to be in effect for the county in fiscal year 2015. What is this GASB 68? What GASB 68 does is it changes the way we have to account and report for pensions. Currently, the way it is now with the county's VRS pension payment, as long as the county makes its annual required contribution, there is no liability reported on the county's financial statements related to any, if there's any unfunded pension liability. What GASB 68 does is it changes that. And if we were to look, I can give you an example. In your CAFR, if we flip over to page 78, 78 in the CAFR shows the funding progress of the county and school systems retirement system. And if the GASB 68 was implemented today, if we look at the first section is the county's retirement section, it has an unfunded pension liability of $4.5 million. Currently, that number is not reported in the county's financial statements. And FY15, that number would have to be included on the county's the statement of a net position. It's entity-wide statements. It's not a fund liability, but would have to be recorded in the entity-wide statements. So just wanted to bring that to y'all's attention. And again, that one, that is effective. We still have a couple more years before that's effective, but FY15 is when that has to be implemented. The last letter that we issued as part of the audit is our communication with those charged with governance. What this letter is auditing standards require that we communicate certain things to you all at the end of an audit, and those we do, and we do that in this form of this letter. There are six required communications, just like to briefly go through those with you. The first communication is related to qualitative aspects of accounting practices. Here we state that management is responsible for the selection and use of appropriate accounting policies. It also states that accounting estimates are an integral part of the county's preparation of the county's financial statements. Difficulties encountered in performing the audit. We had no difficulties with management in performing the audit. If we had any, we would have to disclose those to you all. Corrected or corrected and uncorrected misstatements. There were no uncorrected misstatements. Management did make, did correct any proposed auditing adjustments that we had. Disagreements with management. We had no disagreements with management. If we had any, we would have to, again, have to disclose those to you. And management representations. We did request certain representations from management before we could finalize the audit. That's done in the form of a signed letter that we get from management. And the last thing, management's consultations with other independent accountants. As far as we know, there were no other consultations in terms of second opinion shop. But again, those are just some required communications we have to make to you all at the end of the holiday. The only other thing I'd like to add is that the county did make all of its required reporting deadlines. The county did make its November 30th deadline reporting to the state, the APA. The results of the audit are to be communicated to you all by the end of December, which the county has met that. And the other deadline is the county submits to GFOA for its certificate program for its CAFR, and the report is complete and ready to be submitted, which has to be done by the end of the month.
Good. Very good. Any direct questions at this point?
I have some.
Mr. Weaver.
On these comments that you made here, such as electronic tax payments not recorded in a general ledger, can you go into detail a little bit more on that? When we're talking about $139,229.71, how did that come about more specifically, and what can we do to correct that?
Well, these payments were new transactions during the year. It was related to tax payments that the county makes on behalf of the Piedmont Regional Education Program. It's basically with the way the bank accounts were set up, the county, the prep was providing the county funds, and then the county
reimburse them.
And the part where prep was reimbursing the county, that part, the deposit side was recorded in the general ledger, but the side where the payment was actually going out
wasn't shown.
Did not show up in the general ledger.
Well, when you go down to reconciliation of bank accounts, then if the general ledger had been kept up, we would have caught that.
Yeah, I mean, when you prepare a reconciliation, reconciliation should catch any unposted transactions.
And how often is that general ledger to be brought up to, and how close to the actual results should that be? In other words, is it behind or is it close? I'm sort of, we've had this trouble before, and I'm just wondering how it exists and how we can correct it.
Could it be that you had the problem with the munis transferring data back and forth? No?
Well, I mean, one of the things that does, I mean, first of all, I mean, reconciliations, I mean, they are to be prepared monthly. They are being prepared monthly. You know, in this case, you know, the reconciliations were not prepared accurately.
How close are they? How far behind are they?
How far behind are the, uh-huh, the reconciliations? I don't know where at this point what month the county is reconciled.
But it makes it more difficult the further back it gets to get to catch those mistakes when it happens, then, is it not?
Right, right. The longer a reconciliation.
I mean, if I don't do my checkbook, I can go 3 or 4 or 5 months and not catch a mistake, and there it is all that time.
Mm-hmm.
And could that not materially affect the county?
Certainly, you want reconciliations. You know, the ideal time is, you know, within 2 weeks of the following month of reconciliation is done. Now, certainly the munis implementation, with you have certain pieces are in munis, certain pieces are being pulled from Bright, that does complicate things.
But where do we stand right now as we talk? How far back are the reconciliations going now? Is it like 2 months back or 3 months back or 30 days back or 2 weeks back?
I mean, I can speak that June has been reconciled.
Well, I know that because that's the end of the period. Mm-hmm. Are you saying maybe July is not?
I don't know if July has been reconciled or not.
How can we find out?
I mean, we're working on them. The thing with PrEP, you have to understand, Piedmont Regional Education is not part. It has its own separate entity.
I understand that.
That's other localities' money.
Right.
So when the Virginia Department of Taxation changed the way that we could do state taxes, we could only have two accounts. So we had a cafeteria account and a general
right
account. So PrEP didn't have any way to get their taxes in. So what they did is they used the school system number, and then they reimbursed the county. So their money came into us every month, and it just wasn't showing on the GL side. But the money's all been reimbursed to the county. And then we come up with procedures with, this is how we're in the finance. So we met, was it Monday?
Yes, and all the entries have been made.
So we're all
now, I have to make a manual entry because it all goes through.
And then that goes back how far? Are you sort of catching up then?
Yes.
And I've made the manual entries through for July, August, and September already.
What about the reconciliation? How far back is that?
They are working on them right now.
What month are you working on to reconcile?
I'm thinking we're like October. It's just the part of how Robinson, Farmer, and Cox wanted us to handle this and the procedures that we needed to go through with our munis system to make these entries.
Do we try to keep a framework on that of maybe, say, 2 or 3 weeks to have that reconciliation done so we're up to date?
Yes. And we went all the way back and redid all of this with the PrEP. So everything is showing that data has just given you, plus we're working on October. So
you're saying maybe we're back, what, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that?
Yeah. I mean, Barbara's making the journal entries, and we have a procedure to do things.
So you're shooting for 2 weeks then, sort of?
Yeah.
Okay, because I've heard, you know, this stuff for years, and
right,
and I'm just...
would be a stretch, because once everything is on unit, it'll be much easier, but right now we're still putting the taxes in through Bright, so 2 weeks would be, I
So how long have we been the fiscal agent for PrEP? Do we have to do that? Can another school system?
I think we get paid for it, Simon.
No, sir, we do not.
We don't get anything? Why do they do it then?
They move it around. I thought they moved it around to other systems.
I thought they got like 1% or something like that.
I did not think they were doing this. No, the schools, I think they get an employee or whatever.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's something in it for PrEP.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's maybe good for Fluvanna. I mean, even though maybe it's harder on you, maybe if the school gets another half person or a person,
right.
Because it's my understanding they get something out of this.
I suggest that if you ask Mrs. Keller, she would gladly be rid of it. Now, I can't put words in her mouth, but I'm pretty sure she would gladly not be the fiscal agent for PrEP.
Is that right?
Let another system.
I had not heard that.
We've been the fiscal agent, I think, for a good while. Why not let another system do it if they're not having any great benefits?
That's right.
If it's going to cause...
Or let them pay us, you know, 1% or 0.5%.
In this case, this is a procedural issue between schools, treasurer, finance that needs to be worked out. They've worked that out, figured it out. But we really do need to have reconciliation that's done in the accounts more quickly. It will be easier once Munis is fully implemented. And while it's kind of dragged around, part of it was because Munis sold us a bill of goods. No one caught it, apparently, that there was not the ability in Munis to pay, to bill twice a year for personal property. Mm-hmm. Munis has now upgraded that system. That is now part of their corporate software that they can use for anyone in the state of Virginia. And so Mrs. Lenher's office and will be implementing that through the spring billing season, the first cycle. Once that's in and you have a short waiting period, Bright will be non-existent other than the resident of some old information. And the Munis system will be processing it all. But the reconciliation still need to be a priority, need to be done quickly. 2 weeks is probably not realistic in our system.
So a month probably is realistic.
That's Mrs. Lenner's question and answer, but truly that would help. That would help catch things when you find an administrative problem. There's not a penny missing any place. It's a paperwork problem. Mm-hmm. But the paperwork problem couldn't be caught sooner if we just reconciled in a little different way, and we're working towards that.
But you say Munis has incorporated the two periods now a year, and the reason we didn't do that before because we would had to have paid for that special program, and they have already done it without us having to pay for it?
Correct. When we found out when we found out that we're getting ready to do the final implementation, oh, by the way, the system doesn't do twice a year personal property billing. And it does it can handle twice a year real estate billing, but not personal property. We're one of the localities that does twice a year personal property. When we communicated with Munis and asked them, as I'd recommended to the board, Munis said, okay, sure, we can do that. We can do it in this time frame, and here's what the cost is. And I want to say it was in the $35,000 range. So we balked at that with them. They came back and said, well, okay, but we are going to put that new change in our next set of software. It comes out in the fall of 2013, this last fall. So, Mr. McMahon, are we on 10.3 yet?
We're on 10.3 FF, which is the custom code base that contains what we...
So now that we went to 10.3, and then they went to the 10.3 FF, the additional system that has the twice-a-year billing. So the next time Ms. Lenher gets ready to do her billings in June, the ones that are due June 5th, that process through late winter and spring will be through the Munis system. It'll be fully billed and processed through Munis. But we could not have changed to it sooner without significant costs.
When you bring up the PrEP, though, I was on a PrEP board 100 years ago. And as I recall, they were.
So you're the problem, Mr. Reed.
I'm the problem, right. There you go. My recollection was that they did get paid for that.
Mrs. Keller explained to me this a year and a half or so ago when we talked about PrEP, because I'd never heard of it, and she explained it. And there is something, but it seems to me that she told me that they would gladly not have that little benefit.
Okay.
And it certainly doesn't benefit county staff, the treasurer's office, or the finance manager at all.
But if it benefits someone else and we save money, then that's something else.
Yeah, I don't think you'll find, that's a question for Mrs. Keller.
Okay.
Any further questions at this point in time?
No.
None? Very good. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
go ahead and move on to our consent agenda. Any item that needs to be pulled?
Well, yes. Minutes, there was a mistake in that. Let's see what else.
Mr. Weaver?
Let's see where I am here. Get my tab out here. On the minutes, page 2, public comments. We have Chris Fairchild in the Rivanna district. He's in the Cunningham district.
Yeah. True.
Okay. And then when we go on down to Deer Hunt at Pleasant Grove, I would like to suggest that you put in italics or something in that motion, since it certainly was not in the motion when it was made, the date of the deer hunt. I think that's pertinent information on that. If you could just put that in italics, maybe underneath of that, which was January the 3rd, 2014. And that's the only thing that I had on that one.
And any other alterations to the minutes for December 4th? Do you have any other item that needs to be pulled from the consent agenda?
No.
I would like to just make a quick mention of those two bottom ones on there, the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund requests. Clearly need to be done, but they were part of the CIP. Because of the nature of them, I asked staff to pull them off and put them on Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund requests, because there's sufficient funds there to do that, rather than leave them on the CIP and wait for further along. So that's why those were moved in their new pop-ups.
No objection here. Somebody like to move the consent agenda?
I move the consent agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Moving into unfinished business, we have an appointment to the Planning Commission. Mr. Nichols.
So in this case, the board deferred at the last meeting an appointment to the Planning Commission because we only had one candidate. We wanted to have more a higher group of candidates. We re-advertised, put it out. We actually have two candidates now. I'll pull that up on the screen. There are two applicants for that, Ms. Laura Lee and Mr. Lewis Johnson. And their package, their applications have been attached to your email, that email I sent you the other day with both of those. And so now you've got at least a couple of applicants to consider the replacement for Dr. Babbitt.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Booker.
I would like to appoint or approve Mr. Lewis Johnson. I'm sorry. I move to appoint Lewis Johnson to the Planning Commission, Fauquier District, with a term to begin immediately and to terminate June 30, 2014. This position replaces Dr. Sam Babbitt, who resigned.
Second.
Motion is made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. No other items of unfinished business. We'll move on to new business. James River Water Authority appointment. Mr. Nichols.
So those are the two items. If I can either go through them or not, as you choose, but they're ones that I had explained earlier that you may want
to. Do you have motions for that?
I do have motions, yes.
One?
Maybe you want to wait until the next board on that. What do you think? Huh? Would you want to wait? I don't think it's going to really do any real damage, huh? Or do you want to go ahead with it?
I took a look at the applicants.
Uh-huh.
And
do you have an applicant?
No, we have two.
Yeah.
We have Mr. Chesser and Mr. Kelly.
And Mr. Kelly.
Are you saying we may get more applicants or looking for consistency on the JRWA?
Currently, three members from Fluvanna County, county administrator, citizen rep, and a board of supervisors rep. There's no requirement from the JRWA perspective, and Louisa doesn't have to have a board of supervisor rep. I'm just suggesting that at this point, as of January 1st, you only have two representatives, myself and Mr. Gomez. The first meeting for the JRWA is January 7th. The first board meeting is not till January 8th. So you won't have a third rep. You had mentioned at one time the possibility of having Mr. Chester continue to serve since he's aware of the other day.
Would he be willing to continue?
As a citizen rep.
As a citizen.
He has expressed his interest in that.
Oh, yeah, well, that's fine.
And you have a, second.
Is this 1 year?
Yeah.
Pardon? Is this 1 year?
No, it would be a 4 year term on the JRWA.
I didn't know.
For elected officials, it's during their term. For citizen reps, it's 4 years.
I think that'd be.
Do you want to do 4 years?
Sure.
Are you going to be alive in 4 years?
Are you, mister?
I am.
Have you smoked a cigarette lately?
I'm taking motion at this point.
Taking the easy way out.
There's the top one.
Okay. Move. You go and Don.
Mr. Chairman, I move to appoint Joe Chester to the James River Water Authority Board of Directors, representing Sluvanna County with the term to begin January the 1st, 2014, and to end December 31st, 2017.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 4-0, 5-0. Are you voting for yourself, Mr. Chester?
So 4-0.
Passes 5-0. Mr. Chester enthusiastically endorses
himself. He can't do that, though, can he?
Sure he can.
Can he vote for himself?
Sure.
Yes, sure. It's American.
Yeah. Even the chair can vote for themselves.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
And then Board of Supervisors Representative of the Columbia Task Force.
Right. The second one, there's no specific time frame for this, but the by convention, we've had a Board of Supervisors Representative on the Columbia Task Force. That has been Mr. Kenny. Mr. Kenny's term is ending in office, and therefore he wouldn't be a Board of Supervisors rep. And there was some discussion of do we want another supervisor to appoint to that, and do you want to do it now, or do you want to do it when the new board meets?
I think we'd do that one when the new board is on and the new Columbia representative is on board and make the decision.
The I think the task force meets in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Friday afternoon.
That's correct. In the afternoons.
What time?
Typically 1 o'clock.
Because the person who should be Mr. Sheridan. John Michael Sheridan, Mike Sheridan. But if it's 1 o'clock, unless they change the times, I don't mind sitting here for him until they change the times or whatever. When is that next? They're not having any meeting anytime until January.
There's not one this month.
They're not meeting until January.
So that would be kind of.
Why don't we hold off till January?
A conversation between Mr. Sheridan and myself, if they're not willing to change the time.
Why don't we hold off till January and have that discussion?
I don't mind.
For the three remaining members, I can just add that onto the list of board memberships. Yes. They're not the one required ones, but we can add it to that list of board representation on the Columbia Task Force.
I think
that would
be good.
Considered on January 8th.
That'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You have that board list, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Can you see the board
list? That exhausts any other items in the business? None? Okay, that exhausts our agenda. We'll open up for public comment again. Please remember to keep your comments directed to the board on topic and within 5 minutes. Is anyone wishing to address the board? Seeing none, we will close that round of public comment. Do we have any items for closed session? Hearing none. If
Merry
any,
Christmas and
anything,
Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Anything for the good of the order?
I promised to
Mr. Chester.
Happy New Year. Good. Merry Christmas. I move that we adjourn.
Second. Motion is made by Mr. Chester, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Just a reminder that the January 8th meeting will be the organizational meeting.